Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Love music? Love interviews with lovely musicians? Search Virgin Radio UK on YouTube to find brilliant album specials with some of the shiniest lights on our playlist, including George Ezra.
This is going to be something I'll remember, and that's a really lovely thing. I don't think I was able to do that in the past.
And James Bay. Come on,
let it go. Don't you agree that everybody needs someone when they feel alone?
Watch all that and more at youtube.com/Virgin Radio UK.
Go for it, come on!
She's the brilliant, best-selling broadcaster who owns your radio, owns your television, and now owns your bookshelf. Her super second novel, Way Back, is out today. So pull up your socks and gather your flocks, because you can't say fairer than Sarah Cox!
Wow. All right!
Wow!
Coxie's in the house. The team is so excited that you're here. Felix says, I can't believe it. I got to be in the lift with her. She's really cool. She's so lovely. She's such a legend.
Thanks.
Isn't it brilliant?
So lovely to be here. So lovely to see you all. I was wildly exaggerating in the lift going, darling, I've not seen Chris for 32 years. I was like, no, it's about 5 years, I reckon. But lovely to see you all.
Nice to see you. Sarah Cox, Way Back. Sometimes to move forward, you have to go back. And so you got it all going on. You got Josie and you got Will and you got James. Josie is married to James at the beginning of the book, and they're getting jiggy with it in the first 3 pages,
yeah,
even though they're discussing divorce, having decided on divorce.
Yes.
But it doesn't have to stop the jiggy.
No, well, the part of the reason for the divorce is that the fruity fun times had paused for quite a while during the marriage, and something has reinvigorated them when they know that it's all over. So why not one final little fling?
Yeah, extra time has been called.
Yes.
Isn't so it? It's like... Okay, so you got the initial marriage, 23 years into the marriage.
Yeah.
You got that going on. You got the daughter.
Yeah. Always fun, by the way, a fruited scene when you go to do the audiobook and you realise it's a wet Wednesday morning and you've got to try and read out these fruity scenes.
Yeah.
You know,
And then you build towards, there's James comes in for, sorry, Will comes in for James, and then Fred is Josie's dad, and Fred's no longer with us, but he's based a bit on your dad, but Sandra, Josie's mum, is not based at all on your mum.
I just want to say no, yes, definitely. Jackie and Sandra are a million miles away from each other, yeah.
But obviously, it's best to write what you know. So you do know quite a lot of what's in the book, don't you?
Yeah, 100%. I definitely grew up with some quite matriarchal, strong northern women who can be quite tricksy, but it's definitely not my mum.
Right.
It's because Sandra's quite a handful, isn't she? She's quite a piece of work. She's great. She's a great character to write. I like writing tricksy characters who are a bit of a handful, and I like writing funny women who are supportive and who are cheerleaders for their fellow females and then put them all together in a story.
Well, it's really funny. Sarah.
Thank you.
It's really funny. It's clever. It's revelatory. You do go back. Or your character goes back. I keep thinking that you and her, because I know you, and trying to draw parallels with her. How much of you is in Josie? Where does Josie come from? Who else may have some ingredients that helps Josie's character out that you know of?
Well, I'm living a little bit vicariously through my character, because she's going back to her childhood farm.
Yeah.
And I would love to do that. That is the dream for me, but it ain't going to happen anytime soon. And so I've created this world where this character can potentially go back to the place where she was born and raised. The parallels end with the tough childhood. I didn't have a tough childhood at all. I had a lovely mum. And also, luckily, my dad is, still here, farming his Herefords in Bolton. And obviously, Josie lost her dad when she was 12. And from then on, her life changed completely. Also, she stopped work for a while to raise her daughter. I didn't do that. As you know, I'm still schlepping around trying to flog books and trying to talk fun stuff on the radio. So we're interwoven, but it's easy for me to separate
them. It's great, though. It's so great. You know, that whole thing, it's not so much the 7 year itch, as I say, you know, from a marriage point of view, the 23 year itch. And, you know, how much do we all want to go back? How should you ever go back? It's a nice idea, but what lies in wait for you there?
Yeah.
And the big twists and the turns. I mean, I don't know how much to say about the you know, when you come up with the sort of the moment, because you know because you're writing it, because you know, I presume you know where you're going.
Yes,
with the story,
80%. Yeah. I think I know, and then the character kind of leads you to different places.
Yeah, and then we all need to know that, because we have to trust you as an author, that you're going to get us to a place of excitement and surprise and revelation. Yeah. And boy, do you! Yeah. You know, I don't know what to say. Whether we talk about the keys in the fireplace or we talk about,
I don't think we can.
We can.
Yeah, I don't think we can.
Oh, okay.
But it's fine. It's
right.
Fine. Yeah.
Yeah. We can say different bits of...
The best thing is that the back in the acknowledgements, I do thank a man called Paul who does come and sweep me chimney because of the chimney sweep in the book.
But you thank you also thank your mate, the vet, as well.
Yeah, so James Greenwood, also Loving the Countryside, Farmer Richard.
Yeah.
You know, my mate Emily, who's a GP. I thank loads. I thank my horse.
Yeah. Nelly.
I don't know if that's been done before in the acknowledgements.
I know. Nelly, and you do say, obviously, it's a fantasy to go back to the farm.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's not going to happen, but you would like a small holding for Nelly.
100%.
Okay,
yeah,
I've
just got to extricate my husband from the place where he was born and raised and where his family is, which is North London.
Right.
And, you know, my family's up in Bolton, so I'm thinking north of London somewhere. I don't know if it's a pipe dream. I feel like I would love to go back, way back.
Also, it's the first acknowledgements where I've read that you've thanked, not your childminder, but your horseminder.
Yeah, Elaine, she's amazing. Because sometimes when you're writing, you know from writing yourself that it's the first thing you think of when you're writing a book, when you wake up in the morning, like, oh, I've got to write, I've got to do some writing. And it really hangs over you. And it's a pleasure, but also it takes up so much brain space.
Energy.
And when I would go and have a riding lesson and Elaine's going, your knees are too tight, relax your legs and doing all that, you know, and relax your shoulders and do that, you know, then it was the only time where I'd not be thinking about the book and just be thinking and just being in the moment.
Well, I was going to talk to you about that. I was going to talk to you about the fact that, you know, I've written a few books, Vass has written a few books, but we haven't written fiction. I mean, it's hard enough to write non-fiction, but I mean, the idea of writing fiction, I don't know how you do it. This is the whole thing about novels. They melt my brain because you don't have to create one character. You have to create loads of characters, then a world for them to live in. Then you have to immerse yourself in that world. And then something interesting's got to happen. Yeah. And then something else interesting's got to happen. And something that we can't guess is going to happen is going to happen. Unless we're Mills and Booning and all this kind of stuff. We just want more of the same drug, you know. And when I wrote most of my books, I was doing a show later on in the day because I couldn't do it. The book had to have my first energy, my biggest energy in the morning. And I know that you have arrived at Radio 2 having written in the morning, looking like you've run a marathon.
And also because it's obviously a BBC, so I can't really bang on too much about, and I love to talk about what I've done that day.
Yeah.
But if I've been writing, I feel like I'm trying to do a cheeky plug. So I'd get in there sort of like blinking into the daylight, like, from my writing for a few hours and not really be able to talk about it. And actually, it was the listeners who, I know it sounds cheesy, but it's the listeners who would lift me out of that slight sort of, because it's quite lonely writing, you know, you're just on your own with your laptop and some biscuits, and it would genuinely be the listeners and their texts. And like Sir Terry used to always say, you know what I mean, they provide all the material. Yeah. So it would be the listeners who would sort of lift me out of that stupor, cheer me up.
I'd have a word count. So I'd have to write 1,000 words before I was allowed my first cup of tea.
Yes.
And then I'd be allowed one after 500 and first bicky after 2,000 words.
Yeah. And impressive.
That kind of stuff.
You know David Nichols, author of One Day, obviously.
Yeah.
And he's got a new one out called You Are Here, which is cracking, which I've read. I think that's out next month. He said to me once when I was chatting to him before an interview, and he said, write 1,000 words a day. That's all you have to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And if they're rubbish and you delete half of them or all of them, fine. But just get 1,000 down a day.
Yeah.
So I tried to do that with this. Of course, I got ahead of myself. I'm like, if I do 90,000 words, I'm 90 days. That's 3 months. I can get it on. It doesn't really work like that.
No, but it's three pages a day, 1,000 words, which is like 900 pages a year, which gets you down to 300, which, get, you know, with a decent editor. But, you know,
But the character, you would be able to do the characters in here. No. They are cherry picked from all the different people I meet.
No, it's like talking to Usain Bolt about running. Mm. Oh, it's easy if you know how. Yeah. It's not you. It's ridiculous. You love novels, don't you? You love fiction.
I love
reading.
And Rachel
reading. Loved your first
book. I loved
book.
Your first book. And I, so I got a copy of this. Yeah, you. Loved it. And then I got a copy of this one.
Oh, well, a couple of characters pop up from Throne.
It's just your voice is so distinctive and so relatable, and it even the first couple of pages totally threw me, because you don't, you know, you think you're thinking you're in one situation and then you're not, you're in a different situation, but they're all so alive and vibrant on the page. I loved it. But I need to know what biscuits, if you're there with your laptop and biscuits, what's your writing biscuit?
That is a good question, actually. I like, oh gosh, cookie, what
Maryland
biscuits
cookies.
Do I like? You know what? There's, I've gone posh. They're these French ones that have got a bit of, they're called butter, like le beurre, le biscuit. It's not called that, but they're posh ones with a little sort of...
Oh, scalloped edge.
Scalloped edge.
Yeah, I know the ones.
That's it. Do you know the ones?
I know the ones. They're delicious.
Delicious.
Wow.
I mean... But they're dangerous, you know. When you see people on that, you know, when you see tree surgeons and they're putting stuff through, shredding tree trunks through the shredder. I go like that with those biscuits. There's crumbs everywhere. I'm like, just feeding them in.
Do you do a family tree? Because I was going to do a family tree here to talk about the book. Because I can follow your. It's not.
Yes.
I'm sure as in, you know, relatives, but as a book family is concerned. Is that what you do?
No, I have. I have a room and I have lots of post-it notes, and it's amazing to have it physically up on the wall in front of me.
You feel like a real author. I know you are a real author, but...
It's really satisfying. There's something really satisfying about peeling off a post-it when you're not using it, or you're going to change something. And what's also satisfying, because it's quite naughty, is going writing on the post-it while it's stuck to the wall, because I think that taps into some childhood thing about not being allowed to write on a wall. So going, giving a little note and peeling it and moving it, and so I can have all the characters there. And, you know, sort of all like a constellation of stars.
Constellation of stars, your own superstars. And it's fun because you are having more fun in this one than the last one, because you've done it before. And so, like, you can throw in little in-jokes, like, you know, she listens to Jeremy Vine.
Yes, and that was another good one when I had to do an impression of Jeremy for the audiobook. It's quite hard to do an impression, Jeremy.
He's great. He's good. Because Vassar sounds a bit like Jeremy Vine anyway.
Yes.
He sounds like a cross between sometimes Jeremy Vine and Andrea Marr.
Do I?
Yeah, effortlessly.
You imagine Jeremy, because you're Welsh.
No, come on. You've got it. You did it for the audiobook. You've got recent previous with this. Give us your Jeremy.
So with Jeremy, I thought that he sometimes goes very serious and then he suddenly goes high again. But it's so hard to do. I mean, it's impossible for me to do.
I think listening to an impression of somebody doing an... listening to somebody doing an impression, like John Corshaw. Listen to John Corshaw and try and do John Corshaw's Jeremy Vine. That's what you would do there. Yeah. I think so, anyway. So what did you learn from the first book to write the second book? And by the way, when did you start doing all this writing?
Well, I think...
Clearly you love books, because you have to know them to be able to do it.
I do love... I love reading.
You always
I've
love
always
reading.
Loved reading.
I didn't know that.
And I did the first one. Publishers kept saying, oh, do you want to do a book? This was years ago. And they kept saying, do you want to do like a parenting book? No. And that'd be quite a small book, babe. And so whenever I met publishers, just come and have a chat. And so I'd go and have a chat. And whatever I talk about would be my dad's farm. So that was the memoir out of that, which was Till the Cows Come Home, which was lovely to write. I'm really pleased I did that. And then they said, you write nicely. Why don't you have a go at fiction? So Throne was based on... the pottery, you know, my experience on the pottery throwdown, so I could have a pottery class, and then this one. But I learned to plan a little bit more. But you've got to be careful, because you don't want to ruin the magic by planning too much.
So
you want to make sure the character's taking you somewhere, but you have a bit more of a plan.
Yeah. God, I mean, it's got to be a labour of love.
It really is.
Because it's not about the dosh, is it?
No. I mean, you're literally
like
on like 3p an hour with a book.
It's ridiculous.
I am anyway, because I spend so long. And, you know... whatever you're doing when you're in the middle of a book, all you're thinking is, I should be writing now. And so it really does take... That's why I bang on about it, and I promote it so much on my socials, because I just want people to like it and to enjoy it, because I did put the graft into it.
Yeah, and you can tell.
Thanks.
Mega. I mean, I'm not the biggest non-fiction fan. I'm always the first to say it, but I will read books if the authors are coming on the show and we're going to have a decent chat. I thought it was magnificent.
Yeah, thanks so much, Chris. Thank
you. And it doubles down, doesn't it? At the end, you've got... Well, not at the end, two-thirds in, you have this revelation. That's that. And you go, oh, no, here's another one, here's another one, here's another one. And then Then there's the it's not the birth certificate, the life insurance.
Yes.
I'm saying too much again.
Yeah, yeah, it's fine.
Okay, I'm sure I nearly got the death stare, didn't I? Don't mention the name of the life insurance certificate. Anyway, Paul says, I love Sarah. Grew up with her on late night telly, etc. She's been a staple mark throughout my life.
Lovely. I mean, that's ding.
Did you ever think in your wildest dreams you'd be on a show chatting about your new novel?
No, I mean,
not your first novel, not your, like, I want a competition to write a novel. Your second novel.
I know. I'm really lucky. Look, how did we do this? How did we blag this for so many years? 28 years or whatever.
Blaggers Inc. No doubt about that. And Tony says, how good does Sarah Cox sound on Virgin Radio? Well, you're not the only one thinking that at the moment here on the 17th floor. With the... Sarah comes in, she says, oh, it's nice here, isn't it? I said, yeah, how nice. There you go. There's the boss.
It's a lovely view. Oh, hi. Hi. Yeah.
What's British Sign Language? British Sign Language 4. Which show would you like?
We've got a very lovely view from the 8th floor of NBH in our new studios.
Right. Kim in sunny Southampton says, this is the show I've always wanted. Chris and Sarah. Well, I go to work with Chris and the gang and work out in the afternoon with Sarah. Perfect combo. Listen, you can't say that. You can't. You can, I suppose.
I've got to say hi to Helen at this point.
Yeah.
My lovely boss.
Very important.
Saw your mate last night. I know you mentioned it earlier, Alex Jones.
Oh, right.
Seems we're talking about brilliant Welsh people.
Another person here on this floor saw Will last night.
And she sends her love.
Were you all at the same
thing? Wow. No, I went on the one show talking about the book. Will.
Yeah, yeah.
How's he doing?
He's around.
God.
Everybody's around.
Lovely.
You see, because he was at one of our old haunts last night, and he bumped into one of our other bosses here. And Will was saying, I don't know. What does Chris think? And Denny said, what do you mean? He said, it just smells a bit like the 90s again. It's all coming back.
Well, 90s fashions and stuff are coming back, aren't they? My teens are like...
What is your... Just for people who don't know, can you give us a little sort of career curve for you? When it all began, how it all started, where'd you go?
It began, I guess, when I was 21. So that'd be 1985. All right, whatever. It'd be 90. Let's see. I got my first job at 1995 on The Girly Show.
Yeah.
And then,
who was on that with you?
On that with me on the first series was Rachel Williams, American supermodel, and a wonderful woman called Claire, who only did the one series, and then it was Sarah Kaywood after that with Rachel. Rachel, who she did her filming in America because of visa issues, I think. And then there was some ups and downs for a few years. I did a lot on MTV, which I loved because they just shoved me in a room with a tiny fisheye camera and I could just be me.
Yeah.
And then I got interviewed by Simon Mayo on Radio 1.
Right.
And this was about 97, I think, and I thought, God, this is really fun. Radio's great.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to hold your belly in. You don't need any makeup on. So I loved just being on radio, being interviewed. And then I got the call to go and try out for Radio 1. I think that was about 98, 99.
Because you've been at it so long now, haven't you?
Yeah, well, the funny thing was, I thought I was getting invited to Radio 1. Matthew Bannister, the then controller, left an answer machine message. And said, it's Matthew Bannister here from Radio 1. I thought, this is my big break moment. Yeah. And he was inviting me to Zoe's birthday party. I was like, oh, okay, fine. But yeah, I got in there, breakfast for
so
a few years.
25 years then?
Yeah, and then 2013 got to Radio 2, which was the dream.
I always think of you as a newbie. And you sort of are compared to some of us, but 25 years, I mean, that's pretty, you know.
Yeah, so it'll be, I first, yeah, 28, 29 years this year.
Wow.
That I've been... knocking about. And then tea time, obviously.
Yeah.
The dream.
And it's all good?
Yeah, I'm
it's
really,
all good
yeah, yeah, it's all
okay. All right, so we're two books in. This is, I didn't read the first one. Rachel read the first. She said she loved it. And she and also, it's really fun. I mean, you're a very funny person anyway, but it's really funny. And also, of course, you can be funnier than ever, can't you, in a book? Because you can sort of chip away until it's all, you know, one... paragraph after another.
Yeah,
and
you can hear a little bit like my relationship with Claire, my best mate, and with my other best mates. You can hear that sort of back and forth between the friends.
And it creeps towards Christmas as well.
Yeah,
which for me always screams screenplay. I just think, you know, one on the screenplay.
That'd be great, wouldn't it? And I just like some of the fun names as well. I mean, there's a dog walker in there with hound stretchers.
Which used to be called something else, wasn't it?
Well, she moves and then it goes on to, yeah, she changes the name of the dog walking when the business changes a bit later on. But yeah.
The next question is, Is there more coming?
Yeah, this is a 2-book deal. This is the first of two, so...
Which is great when you sign it, but then you've got to write it.
I know. And then, so I think I'm actually starting to perspire on my back. I think it's got to be in for like...
See, Richard Osman's just really, because he writes like 3 at a time, doesn't he?
I've written
the 17th one already.
Yeah,
now.
He's a machine, isn't he? What's going on? It's outrageous.
Do you talk to other authors now? Do you like compare notes and things?
Not really. I mean, if I interview them, then when I meet. But I mean, even when I bumped into Vassos in the corridor, I was like, "You've written books, haven't you?" I'm just constantly saying that to people.
It's different, though, isn't it, Vass?
It really is different. Because the thing is, we just write what happened, whereas you've got to make up what happened. Yeah. We were with the team yesterday when they gave me a copy of your book, right? And we thought, okay, because I hadn't read your first book, but I know you and I was really looking forward to reading it. And so I said, do you know what I do if I'm in a bookshop and if I'm at an airport or something? Mm. I'll read the first paragraph and I sort of feel I know. Yeah. I said, right, I'm going to read the first paragraph of Sarah's book and then we'll know, right? And then listen to this, everyone. This is so good. The thing is, I can't quite take my eyes off James, and not in a good way. He's still licking the fork. Yep, I'm in. Thank you very much. And the other thing is, when I was reading the texts between Josie and Chloe at university, I was thinking, has Sarah nicked my phone? Has she got my WhatsApps?
Yes.
Because that's just me and Emily.
Yes, yes. Yeah, where she's just like... And also, what I get sent a lot by my kids, by my eldest, is GTG, which is got to go. Right. She's so busy. GTG.
Seriously. Seriously, with no vowels.
Seriously.
I'm not into GTG territory yet. Do you have a novel in you, Rachel?
I don't know. I wanted to ask you, if you've asked so many authors about their book writing experiences, what's the best advice they've given you?
I think the David Nichols 1,000 words a day is fantastic. And also it's the old classic of just write what you know. And so I think that really helps. So, you know, that you've just got to have some of your own experiences in there. That always helps. But if anybody's listening now, I'd love to have a go at writing. I think everybody should write a memoir just for themselves or for their kids or for their, for whoever, because to write it all down, there's a real pleasure in it. And, you know, everyone's met characters all through their lives. And that in itself is a real pleasant, and it does use a different bit of your brain. It's a real lovely thing to
do. Without question. I mean, that is an interesting thing, isn't it? Because often we hear this voice in our head, we talked about it last week, and you think it's you, but it's not you, it's your chimp, you know, and they say, don't listen to yourself, talk to yourself. And it's the talking to yourself voice that might have a book in it.
Yeah.
But also they do say, you know, you've got to have a big enough why to find a how. And some people just don't have time to write or to do that. Whereas if you sign a 2-book deal, you've got to do that. Otherwise they sue you.
Yeah, well, hopefully it won't come to that. No, I've got a sweaty back again.
Or you've got to give them sorry about your sweaty back. Please say a character in your next book has got to have a sweaty back. Val says, I'm loving Sarah Cox, coming from one proud northern to another.
Oh,
what a
hi,
superstar.
Val.
So authentic. You know Val.
I love Val. Yeah. Me and her go way back.
Abby Ellen Worthy, morning, Chris Vass, Rachel and Sarah. I absolutely love Sarah's first book, virtually inhaled it. I adore Between the Covers. It's like a cozy chat with friends and now can't wait to read the second book. Nice.
Thank you. Yeah, that comes back October. What's lovely on holiday, we did keep seeing people reading both books and the kids would be like, Mom, there's a woman reading your book by the pool. I'm like, shut up, don't look. Because, you know, obviously you don't want to be like, hey.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a lovely feeling.
You're not tempted to go over and go, what bit are you at?
Well, she spotted me eventually, obviously, because, you know me, we were a little
character
mermaid,
and plot.
Around the pool. Yeah, and we have like, hi. And then sometimes,
that's cool,
you know,
though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great feeling. A lady on the tube, she waited till she was getting off at her stop and she just came over and she just picked Throne up out of her bag and went, I've got your book. I was like, thanks. And then she leapt off the tube.
Love it.
It's lovely. I appreciate it. You know, I appreciate people spending money on books and reading them. So thank you.
Yeah. another one of your bosses, it rhymes with boss, Amanda Ross.
Yes.
Should we give her a shout out?
Yeah, the force of nature that is Amanda Ross.
One of the titans of telly.
100%. Inventor of the Richard and Judy Book Club.
Yeah.
The mastermind behind that.
Okay, Saturday Kitchen.
Saturday Kitchen, huge show.
Yeah.
Between the Covers, what a woman.
Yeah.
I mean, Amanda's been massive, and she's always massively supportive with the books as well.
Yeah, she loves the bones of you. Kathleen Norfolk says, you and Sarah at the bookends to my radio listening day. You've got to stop this. I can't keep saying this.
I know.
You could say in a certain situation, if that were ever to happen. Can't say it now. It's quite strange to hear you on the radio together, says Kathleen Norfolk.
It's not happened often because at your old place, I'd be in for you.
Yeah.
On brekkie, so our paths didn't really cross. Nobody ever saw us in the same room at the same time.
I came in once and it was, I think you were doing Saturday afternoon or something. I can't remember. And you were eating chicken chow mein. Do you remember? Do you remember?
Was this at two or at one? At two, was that?
Yeah, you just got. I think it was a Chinese takeaway you just had. You just.
Oh, it might be.
You were inhaling that as well.
Yeah, it might be from. I like that Great Thai place that was called the Great Thai. That's not my recommendation. That's what it's called. Yeah, maybe that was me. It sounds like me if I was eating. I'm never far from a snack.
So I don't know how much to say about the plot for the book. We've alluded to it. Okay, let's just recap on the main character. We own Pern, 23 years of marriage. They've discussed getting divorced. Three weeks into getting divorced, he's very reasonable. They've got a house in Hampstead.
Yeah.
She gets back to the family farm. Certain things happen and unfold. There's lots of drinking.
Yes, there is, isn't there? Yeah, there's loads, a lot of red wine.
There's loads of red wine. what else do you want to say? Come on, Sarah Cox, way back out today.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, it's about a woman. I think she's really brave, Josie, because I think she doesn't give herself enough credit. And I think a lot of people do that. And I think a lot of women do that.
Yeah.
I think she had a tough time. She made something of herself and she's had a great life, but she just needs to get to what is the kernel of herself, what is right at the centre. And to do that, she's got to go back. She's got to go way back. She's got to go back to the farm. She's got to discover who she is, and she does.
And what went on.
Yeah, and what went on. And there's some great friendships made along the way. And, and I hope people will feel... When I was doing the audiobook, I had to have a moment because bits of it had made me cry, nearly. And it just felt...
Why was that then?
I just think it just resonated with me and just, you know, it just affected me. So I thought, well, if I've written it, then hopefully people will feel those emotions as well. And at the same time, you know, I was having a little chuckle, especially at my various impressions.
And did your editor spot those bits in the book? Because really good editors spot the bits that move the author, because there's a different flavour to those particular passages.
Yeah, I've got a great editor called Hannah Black, and I love her. And she is brilliant because it's basically like dealing with... an emotional teenager when she rings me or when we, because I'm not very good at direction and because I think I've got a bit of, you know, stay in your lane-ism a bit still.
Imposter syndrome.
A bit of imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
And so any sort of feedback, I'm like, oh, I'm terrible, I'm a show-off, it's embarrassing. And she's brilliant at handling me and just zeroing in on the good bits and gently, you know, helping me.
Right.
She's great.
Well, you can tell it's your second novel as opposed to your first.
That's interesting. Can you?
No, from many points of view.
Oh, interesting.
Particularly one aspect now, which is you're doing what experienced authors do, is you've come in with something to match the book cover for the photo. It's your nails. They haven't gone unnoticed. It's for the photo, isn't it? We're going to be holding the book. Yes or no?
Of course it is.
You've got the way back nails on, man.
I mean, it's lovely as a book cover, lime green with a splash of red. But for nails, it's disgusting.
It's quite a punchy choice.
It's horrible. People have been politely going, oh, I love your nails. I'm like, they're disgusting. But yeah, it's nice for a book.
The thing that made me chuckle a lot also is you do point out to everybody... via your husband, that everything's all right at home.
Oh, yeah. Because when he first said, what's it about, babe? And I'm like, it's about a woman who's happily divorced and she moves to a farm.
How old is she? Well, she's about my age. Yeah. I mean, you know.
He's like, babe. I'm like, don't worry, you've got nothing to worry about.
It's all right. Okay.
At the moment.
So all good.
Keep him on his toes.
Yeah, all good.
No, really not.
Sarah, great to see you again.
Oh, it's lovely to see you. Thank you.
All right. It's going to be another bestseller. Of course it is, from the Sunday Times bestseller. Sarah Cox, from the Sunday Times best-selling authoress, Sarah Cox. Way back. Sometimes to move forward, you have to go back. Great to see you.
Lovely to see you.
Thanks.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So much.
Craving some great 80s music? Play Virgin Radio 80s Plus. I want your love. On DAB digital radio, on the app, on your smart speaker, and at virginradio80splus.co.uk.
I got my mind set on you, even if we're just dancing in the dark.
Love Chris Evans. Woo! Love the 80s.
Virgin Radio
80s Plus.
Jasmine Paris.
Good morning, Jasmine.
Hello. Good morning.
Congratulations. How was it? What was it like, Jasmine?
I mean, finishing was fantastic. The challenge itself was pretty hard. I won't lie about it. It was definitely the hardest thing I've ever done.
All right. Now, I don't want you to not waste your time, but to use up our time with you on you describing what the Barclay Marathons is or are, because people can just Google that. But the challenge is unbelievable. So 20 odd athletes have only ever finished this marathon, which has been going on for 3 decades now, something like that. And yeah. There are 5 loops. Now, you have entered before, haven't you? You have had a go before.
Yeah, I've had a couple of goes. Yeah, I did 3 loops and I did 4 loops, but over time. So, I definitely had something that I wanted to prove with this year. Yeah, I thought I could do it and I really went for it and really believed in myself.
Right, so for people listening and they're hearing 3 loops, it sounds like, you know, 3 loops of a track down your local rec. Can you describe the loops, please, and what 3 loops mean?
Each of these loops is essentially, it's in the wilderness and super steep terrain. You're always going up or down. The race has like twice the ascent of Everest. There's lots of kind of wild undergrowth. You're going through briars, big brambles that slash you as you go. And you have to find books and pull out pages to prove that you went to various points in the course. It's like a massive treasure hunt in a kind of wilderness location. Yeah.
Right. And there's a 60-hour limit to the 5 loops, and the loops are 20 miles ish, depending on how much you get lost doing each loop. And then once you've completed a loop, whether it's, you know, in daytime or nighttime, you think, well, people listening think, well, that's right, you just do the same thing again. But you have to go the other way around, don't you?
Yeah, and that actually changes it completely navigationally. Yeah, you have totally different landmarks to look out for because the map's very bad. So a lot of it's done on what you learn as you go through the course. You look out for a tree with a broken stump, you know, a stump or something like that to know where to turn. So, having been there before is a big advantage.
Oh, my goodness. And if you achieve 3 loops, that's called the fun run, isn't it?
Yeah, I remember saying it was a rather ironic name for it because it's probably anything but fun at that point. But yeah.
All right, so 60-hour cutoff. How many seconds did you have in hand at the end?
99.
Unbelievable. Did you have any doubt that you were going to make it? Did you have to up your game? Were you close to giving up at any point? Did you know it was going to be so close?
I mean, I knew from hours out that it was going to be really, that it was going to be close. And I was really racing from, you know, from 6 hours out, I was really pushing to get to the finish and I couldn't even have time to eat and drink. And it was just, it was like, I was fueled by adrenaline. I was just like, I was running for my life, but it wasn't. And I still believed it was just the last, you know, kilometer or so when I started to doubt whether I actually could still make it because it was still uphill and I had to sprint to the finish. And everything in me was screaming to stop.
Isn't that interesting? After all those miles, all those kilometers, in the last kilometer, you still get that sort of finish line phobia.
Yeah, exactly. That's just like that, yeah.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. So 59 hours, 58 minutes and some odd seconds. The highs and the lows, you know, when you feel like you just can't carry on, and then when you, you know, maybe 12 or 14 hours after that, you sort of begin to feel mildly invincible again. Is there a pattern to it? Do you get any clues mentally or physically which way it's going to go?
I think you know, darkness is always harder because when you're falling asleep, that makes it harder. Generally what happens is you try and get yourself to eat and then you feel better. And you know when you've done enough of these long things that you'll come out the other side of one of those bad patches and it'll get better again. But you definitely have pretty, pretty rough times.
All right, brain, mind versus the body. Which has the toughest challenge during the Barclay Marathons?
I think it's equal probably.
Really?
I mean, the mind is a huge part of it. As much as all the training and physically being capable, just having that belief that you can do it, and just that willingness, that ability to withstand the kind of suffering and the challenges, because it keeps throwing challenges at you. You have to keep picking yourself up off the floor and adjusting to having been lost or being sick or whatever else it is that's your challenge. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And you just have to carry on. Yeah.
Did you take any mantras with you? Any thoughts?
I mean, when things were really tough, I thought about my kids, just to keep going. At one point, actually, when I was on that kind of like final 3 hours and I was really pushed for time, I was trying to get myself to walk faster uphill and I was chanting the names in my head of my family and each of them were pushing me one step up the hill. It was like we were all doing it together. That was really special.
And you take that kind of strategy with you in the race. You know that you're going to get to that point and you know you're going to need those names.
I think thinking about the people that are back at home, yeah, that definitely helps. But I also have a huge personal drive that I wanted to do it for me. So like that takes me a long way already.
All right. And which bit of your body hurt the most often?
My legs, but various parts of my legs. And it's interesting how the kind of your focus switches to whatever's most painful at that particular moment.
Which was most painful first?
Which was most painful first?
Yeah.
Probably I fell at one point and twisted my knee at a funny angle. Done something slightly to the medial collateral ligament or something, but it's not. I think it'll be all right. But that actually got better as other pains got worse again later on. So that's the way it always goes.
All right, and food and fueling, because lots of people who listen to the show run and will be running London, for example, for the first time ever this year. Can you just give us some super hacks from one who really knows?
I don't even know that I have any super hacks. I kind of really struggled. And when I was at the check, you know, the kind of the interlupal periods when I had someone to feed me, I ate, you know, pasta or porridge, rice pudding, bananas always work well. That's what the one thing my tip would be, bananas.
That's my go-to. Steve Cram has this super banana tip. Do you know about this one?
No.
So he says before the marathon, you have a greenish banana. And then during the marathon, you have to have ripe or overripe bananas because of the sugar content, the different sugar content as the release of the carbohydrate, blah, blah, blah.
Good. There you go. See, you've given everyone a tip about bananas.
I'm guessing you're ripe all the way. And again, for people listening who may be doing a 5K for the first time or a 10K, you know, the other end of the scale, you know, and are struggling. Any advice for those guys?
You know, I think if you want, you know, I would try and make running as fun as you can. So for me, that if I'm trying to make running fun, I would run in the hills with friends, and like set a date that you're gonna, you know, time that you're gonna go with friends, and then you can't back out. And once you're there, you'll love it. So that's what I think is a really good. Join a club as well. That's a useful thing to help with training.
Nice. Share the energy. Spread the energy. Share the energy. Join people who are doing what you want to do already. That's always helpful. For people, again, who don't know, I do know, but for people who don't know, how does the Barclay Marathons finish?
So you have to touch a gate. It's at each end of each loop, you have to get back to the yellow gate. Everybody in this, when I was finishing, all these, everybody was kind of around the gate screaming at me to finish, and I was running down this kind of, and then when you get to the end, obviously you have to give in your pages, and your pages get counted from the books to show that you've been everywhere you need to be. And then if you've actually finished it, you get to press a button and it says, that was easy. That's the kind of magic button at the end that you get to press. If you're one of the 20 people that have finished in the last 4 decades.
There's this gallows humour that is the undercurrent of the whole narrative, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly.
And when you stop running after 60 hours of such effort, what happens to you then as a human being? What is it like for the first 10 minutes, for the next hour, for the next few hours? What effect does stopping doing that have on your body that's just had to go through that?
I mean, I feel like you suddenly can't move at all. Like, then the idea of being able to run is insane. You can't even walk down to the car, and yet, you know, an hour before you were sprinting up the hill. So it's like everything stops when you, once you don't need to do it, everything sort of crumbles. But it's amazing what, you know, a few nights of sleep and good food can do. And now I feel pretty good again. So,
I was going to say, how did you sleep the first big sleep? What was that like?
I slept all right. Sometimes it can be a difficult to sleep after these things, but I slept all right. I think I was just kind of semi-conscious. we ate some pizza and then I pretty much passed out.
And how are your legs now?
They're pretty good, yeah. Still a bit swollen. They tend to, you know, they get very swollen after these long distances, especially because I flew back from the States yesterday. But they're good. I've got some kind of decent blisters, but they're healing over a bit now as well. So swollen, scratched, a bit of tendonitis, but I think they'll be good to run in a week or two.
Oh my goodness me. And now you've completed this, the greatest physical challenge, maybe the greatest physical challenge on earth, and you've done it, the first woman ever to do it. By the way, control round of applause, please, if you don't mind, for Jasmine Paris. Here we go. These are very rare, Jasmine. Here we go.
Yay! Yes, Jasmine!
What next, Jasmine? What next for those legs of yours?
I mean, they're going to have a few months of doing some Scottish hill running, which is, I guess, my first love, and and the community I love as well. So some easy, fun stuff to kind of remind me what it is I love about actually just being in the hills and running. And I've got the next kind of big thing is a multi-day race in the Italian mountains called the Tour de Gion, which is another one of these non-stop races where you don't sleep very much. So that'll be another exciting one.
All right. Jasmine is 40 years old, by the way. She's married, she has two kids, and you can follow Jasmine at Jasmine K Paris on X. Jasmine, you are an absolute hero. When we had this marathon retreat for the London Marathon with lovely auction bidders who've given us money to charity, and the news came through while we were all together as a gang. Wow. And we immediately went to YouTube and we just watched everything we could to do with your finish and the brilliant reporting of your finish. And that picture of you by that gate is going straight on our, we've got a garage gym at home and we're putting it up on the, we're getting the best quality reproduction of that picture in you, and we're sticking it up there and we're saying, look, everybody that enters this garage, this little gym, you know, put up or shut up, because look at that picture. You're amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Love music. Love interviews with lovely musicians. Search Virgin Radio UK on YouTube to find brilliant album specials with some of the shiniest lights on our playlist, including George Ezra.
It won't be like this forever, so just enjoy it while it's here. It's a really wonderful thing.
And James Bay.
It's about me. It's about my relationship with Lucy. It sums up so much of what went into writing this whole album. We're all works in progress. I still don't necessarily know who I am.
And Depeche Mode's Dave Gahan remembering the late, great Andy Fletcher.
I'll be honest with you, the first thought that came in my head was, I wish I'd been a bit kinder.
Watch all that and more at youtube.com/Virgin Radio UK.
That's ours.
Our next guest is one of the greatest strikers to ever play for Wales. His career with the Dragons spanned 3 decades, 75 years, 22 goals, and now he's one of our firm favourites on Talk Sport down the corridor. It's Wales v Poland tonight for a place in the Euros. It's win or lose and nothing in between. So, I mean, welcome, Dean Saunders.
Good morning, Dean.
Morning, gents. Morning. How are you?
I'm very well. I think I might be as excited as most actual Welsh people this morning. Am I right to be? How are you feeling? Here we go. 7:45 tonight. Wales versus Poland.
Well, it's been a bit strange, the journey, really, because obviously we were in mourning. Gareth Bale retired. And we just sort of dipped a little bit in our form. We got beat by Armenia, then we got beat by Turkey. And it's the ghost of Gareth Bale again. His goals in the Nations League got us to this stage where we were able to have a playoff game against Finland and Poland tonight. So we got to thank him for getting us to this stage as well. But it's a big game. And you know what? I wish I was playing. But you're not as nervous when you're playing,
really,
as when you're watching.
Interesting. What will your duties be tonight, Dean?
Well, I'm at the ground with Lawrence Mora, and obviously around the England game, England-Belgium, we'll be coming back and forth to the game if there's anything happening, and we'll be there at probably about 5 o'clock all the way through till to 11 o'clock on TalkSport. So, fingers crossed, we're all going to Germany.
You do actually sound nervous, Dean.
I am a bit, because it's a one-off game. And both teams, I think, are quite equal. Obviously, they've got Lewandowski, who scored... I had a look at his record last night. It's ridiculous. He scored 500 goals without scoring for Poland, right. just his club career.
Right.
You look at his history, and it's like 44 goals, 52, 38, 44, 45. He's a ridiculous goal scorer, and he's 35, so he's not like he was, but dangerous in the box. If we don't mark him tonight and get tight to him, he just needs half a yard and you're in trouble.
Right, so he's your nailed-on danger man then?
Well, Zielinski, who plays for Napoli, playmaker in midfield, he's the one that supplies him with his chances.
Right.
So we've got young Ampadu and Jordan James in midfield. They've got to try and stop the supply coming, but I think the game's going to be really tight. It's going to go right to the end. We might get extra time. I hope not. But we've got some young players there with a load of pace. I think he's got a decision whether he plays Ramsey or Dan James. It's hard to leave both of them on the bench, but I think he might. And Kiefer Moore. He might leave him on the bench. And we might go with the same team. So I'm glad I'm not Robert Page tonight.
You sound like you're having to make the decision yourself and you're thinking about it live on the radio. Oh. His team is so funny. It's so cute. So gorgeous to hear you. So passionate. As you would be in caring, but also really quite conscientious and nervous about everything. So going into the game tonight, 7:45. You know, the whole of Wales will be watching. What are you going to do for the rest of the day? I mean, you need to go and have a game of golf or something. Because it couldn't be closer. The bookies are calling it really close. They're saying 2-1 Poland, 13-8 Wales. And that's the bookies in Wales.
Well, Chris, I'm in the car park now at Delamere Golf Club.
Oh, there
you
go.
So I was on my way to the range to do what you just said to do, to try and relax my nerves a little bit, hit some balls, and I turned back because you rung me.
Oh, dear. All right, OK, well, forgive us that. Please turn around and go and hit some balls.
No, I'm going to travel down from Cheshire down to Cardiff, and then we're going to get there early and then just panic for about 4 hours, just sit there panicking, but... I've been a manager, Chris, and actually, sometimes you don't enjoy match day.
Yeah.
You don't enjoy it.
Oh
my gosh. You enjoy the build-up, but when you stood there on the side of the pitch, I know how Robert Page is going to feel tonight.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, come what may, Dino, tonight, the point is you've got to enjoy it because it's a massive game and these games don't come along very often.
No, not for us. I mean, I played from when I was, I think I was 19, 20, till I was 37. And I never qualified. We never got through.
Yeah.
We missed out close. We come close a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And now this group of players, I was coached for 3 years. We never qualified with John Toshack. And then I become a pundit. And we got to France in 2016. And now this is like four on the trot. If we can get there tonight, that's four major tournaments we've qualified for. And we've not got that many players. You know, you look at England, right? And I'm looking at Ben White and why he's decided to not play for England. Well, he's fifth choice right back. Yeah. Maybe that's the reason.
Yeah, yeah.
We've only got one right back, Connor Roberts.
Yeah.
And if he's injured, we're searching into League One and League Two to find a right back. So we haven't got that many players and we need them all fit on the day. You've seen in the World Cup where Robert Page had no option but to play Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey even when they weren't fit. They deserved it, the two of them, between them. Gareth Bale, they should build a statue of him in Cardiff, what he's done for our country.
I'm sure they're working on it. I'm sure they're working on it.
Yeah.
Dean, you're making me nervous. I'm gonna curtail the phone call because I'm actually getting quite nervous now, which is good. I'm enjoying it a lot. If you were in the dressing room and you were the coach of the national squad, what 12, 15, 20 words might you say to them before they take to the field tonight?
Do you know, it's so difficult. I've managed teams in the playoffs. You know, we've been in the playoffs and I've managed teams where you got to win. I've played in cup finals. And as a manager now, I realise after I've managed six teams, you just keep your fingers crossed that, like, are they listening? And are they going to freeze? If they freeze on the day and they don't play like they can play, you get beat. If they go out and play like they can play without a care in the world, but it's hard to get them in that frame of mind.
So what are you going to say? Come on.
Well, I would just say to them, look, you know, we've got a one-off game. Don't give them a goal. Don't give them a start, because this team, this Poland team, they've been beaten by Moldova not long ago. They got beat by Albania. So they crumble. If they lose a goal, this team will crumble. So if we get in front, I think Poland might go under. They beat teams that they should beat, but they always get beat against the bigger teams. And when they're under the cosh, they might go under. So get on the front foot, try and get an early goal, and you'll see a different Poland when they're losing.
Love it. All right.
Apart from that, and that's why I got sacked.
I knew you were going to say that. Dino, listen, have a great day on the driving range. Safe drive down to Cardiff, and good luck tonight.
Thanks, Chris. Hey, I'll be at Carfest, by the way, in August. I'll be there.
Well, if you win tonight, we'll call it Cardiff Fest in your honour.
Okay.
All right, mate. Lots of love.
Thanks,
bye.
Chris. See you later.
Love music? Love interviews with lovely musicians? Search Virgin Radio UK on YouTube to find brilliant album specials with some of the shiniest lights on our playlist, including George Ezra.
This is going to be something I'll remember, and that's a really lovely thing. I don't think I was able to do that in the past.
And James Bay. Come on,
lady. Don't you agree that everybody needs someone when they feel alone?
Watch all that and more at youtube.com/Virgin Radio UK.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.